Welcome to a special podcast for Reaction Weekends. This week we're going to talk about sport, the unlikely coalition of sport and philosophy. And to help us, we're joined by John McKenzie, who's a freelance football journalist and a former football editor for Real Sport. He's written for The Economist on Foucault and Cruyff, and we were at university together and worked for a magazine called The Cambridge Globalist, for which John also wrote an article on I think FIFA and Walter Benjamin, which I remember finding pretty fascinating. And I'm also joined by Finn McRedmond, staff writer. So we're kind of following up an article you did, John, on Jose Mourinho using Hegel to combat a tricky question at a press conference. And I was kind of quite viscerally reminded of the Monty Python football philosophy sketch, which dramatises a contest between the ancients and the moderns, and then reimagines it as a game of football. So does Mourinho, in a sense, get on the pitch with those guys?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in the press conference in question, I don't know how I'll set the scene, because I don't know how many of your listeners will necessarily be au fait with what's going on in the Premier League. But Manchester United have since the days of Sir Alex Ferguson, who everyone will have heard of, have struggled to really retain the sort of glory that they had in the past three or four decades. And they've been on this long path to try and find a manager who will work for them as a manager, and it's not going well. And they brought in three seasons ago, including this season, Jose Mourinho, one of the most famous managers in world football. But he, in his two seasons and a bit, has failed to actually reach the sort of level that people expected of him. So he was in this press conference on Thursday last week, and they just lost to Tottenham 3-0 at home, which is inglorious if you're a Manchester United fan. And questions were being asked of Jose Mourinho, will this current period at Manchester United actually affect your status as being one of the greats? To which he then replies, he said this to these journalists. He said, "Have you read any philosophy?" And they were obviously very uncomfortable, because I don't think you go into a press conference expecting to be asked whether or not you have any understanding of philosophy. And then he says, "No. Well, for example, Hegel says the truth is in the whole." Was the quote that he gave? And by that meaning, look, I've got all of this past history, which is. I suppose makes me a great, and that's not going to change, that's not going to go away. As soon as this happened, my Twitter DMs just went crazy, because people know that I talk about philosophy and I talk about football, and there's not many people who like both of those things. So everyone was like, have you seen what's just happened? And I went on it and listened to it, and I thought, this is great, I've got to write something. So I over the weekend I sort of bashed out a few thoughts, and it went down really well. I was actually surprised. I thought it would get panned, partly because I think when you talk about philosophy in football, you're setting yourself up to be panned by people being like, oh, this is just pretentious. X, Y, and Z. But yeah, it went down really well. A lot of people saying, oh, a few people asking, oh, is there now scope for more of this type of piece in football writing? So that was how this whole thing came about.
And your broad point was kind of that Mourinho's not right.
Yeah, the point for Hegel is that you can't judge what a thing is until you reach the end of its process of development. And I suppose what you find in Hegel, and this is where the phrase dialectic comes in, and that's what I wanted the whole point of the piece to be, a sort of like explanation of what Hegel's dialectic is and why that might apply to football. If you apply Hegel comes from a whole philosophical tradition where there's a sort of accepted logical form of the way that your arguments can develop, and it starts in Plato. So in Plato you have the Socratic dialogues, and the Socratic dialogues are just two people talking to each other with different positions, and between them working themselves to a more coherent, complex idea, which is fine, and that's how these things happen. The example being, you could start with a position that all swans are white, and then you have someone else saying, well, this is a swan that is black, how do you then bring those two ideas together? And where Hegel is different from Plato, and Plato would say these two things can't coexist, there's a problem here. We need to start again with new premises. Premises are wrong. What Hegel wants to do is he wants to say, actually, there's a little bit more to it than that. You can take those two positions, retain the sort of contradictions between them, and move to another position, which is actually taking the truth of those things, but also getting rid of the limitations of them. So you would redefine basically what your definition of a swan was. You would say swans are black and white. That's just a really general overview of what the dialectic is. But for me, applying that to football, my argument with respect to Mourinho is look, you've got to have this sort of account of development through history, where you take contradicting positions and you move to a new one. So the bringing in Guardiola was done as an example of a way that you can move past Mourinho. He gave another press conference the week. It was the same week, but it was after the Manchester United Tottenham game, where he said, "Oh, look, the press." He said to the press, "Look, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to play well, or do you want me to win?" Because they played quite well in that game, but they lost. And usually, they would win and play badly. Mm. And I was using that as an example of why Mourinho isn't Hegelian in that sense, because Hegel would say, "You've got to you can move beyond those two seemingly contradicting ideas and go to another place."
So it would be completely absurd of us to expect Mourinho to be a Hegelian scholar, a Platonic scholar, and also, someone I'm going to add in, is a Rawlsian scholar. But actually, maybe he would have been better off. Maybe his ideas are actually better formulated in a Rawlsian way. He has this idea of reflective equilibrium. Mm-hmm. Which is, I'm not going to bore you guys for too long, but it's a dialectic that you engage in with yourself. So you have a starting point, and then you have another starting point, and you work those two possibly contradictory starting points together, constantly referencing them and reformulating them until they create a singular coherent idea. Mm-hmm. And maybe... Mourinho going, okay, so I can play well or I can win, and actually what he needs to do is engage in this process of reflective equilibrium as Rawls would want. And reformulate both of those ideas in a constant internal dialogue until arriving at the idea that actually those two things aren't contradictory. You just need to shake off the limitations of both original starting points, but that's asking a lot of a man who's got far more important things on his mind.
What I found interesting about the press conference is a broader thing with football, and this is bringing the discussion right back down to a more prosaic plane. It's weird when footballers express interest in things outside of the game. It's weird even when Harry Kane says he likes Dua Lipa. You know, it's weird when you see Fabian Delph reading All Quiet on the Western Front on aeroplane. And that's because we're so accustomed to seeing these people as basically defined by their professionalism. Yeah. They have no interest in culture or context or ideas. What I'm getting towards is saying, do you think that there is a room for more ideas in football when everything seems to be kind of drilled down to this kind of very professionalised commercial thing?
Yeah, I think the reason why we're so shocked when we realise that there may be aspects of personality that accrue to footballers is because they're PR to within an inch of their life, usually. So whenever something like that happens, on the one hand, like you say, we're surprised. On the other hand, there's always a sneaking suspicion that they've actually been told to do something like that. So your immediate thought when seeing Fabian Delph reading All Quiet on the Western Front on a plane is he actually reading it, or is it is
what
this
kind of PR is after that?
Yeah, exactly. But my point here is not that he is or isn't. It's that is the automatic go-to that you think you don't take them on face value anymore. It's impossible to. So when someone like Harry Kane says the Dua Lipa thing, I think is probably a better example of that. Like, Is he actually a fan of Dua Lipa, or is he being told, think of a few things that you can tell people to make yourself appear a little bit more human? So I think that's the context behind that question. That's why it feels so weird. In terms of, do I think that there's space for ideas in football? I think yes, maybe not from the side of the footballers. And I think part of that is to do with the fact that the way that the game has been professionalised and the fact that the Premier League is one of the richest sports leagues in the world means that, and it becomes just incredibly efficient all the way down. So kids are now being taken out of society, as it were, at the age of like 10 and younger. And what that means is they don't go through that process whereby they learn to find out what it is that they like. They also don't go through that phase that we go through where
you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And you go to school and you're trying to express yourself and someone's like, you look like a moron. And whilst I wouldn't condone bullying in any way, there is a sense in which, your personality and your traits and the things that you like are developed through a sort of back and forth amongst your contemporaries. And I think taking kids out of society and sort of academising them and making them ultimate professionals from that early age means that you don't really get too much of a...
It's interesting that you separate between the players and everything else that goes on in the sport, because sure, the players might not be engaging with football in a Hegelian way or like this big ideas kind of way, but so often the commercialization of the sport is kind of dealing with grand themes and stuff, like in this recent Colin Kaepernick advert in Nike advert, where it's about Colin Kaepernick and his take the knee protest, and obviously there must be this idea that big sport can capitalize off kind of like protest ideas or radical ideas and stuff. I don't know. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that. Like, why is that attractive to sport in a commercial way as opposed to just in a purely physical?
But what I find interesting about the Colin Kaepernick, the statement on that advert, which I've got here, is my computer just frozen. Believe in something, even if you have to sacrifice everything. Yeah. Which is actually, I mean, you can read that as a comment on his activism and his protest, but also could equally be read as just a very banal statement of what a lot of sport now is, like entering into an academy system where you forego like interaction with your peers apart from like a very small set of equally talented hyper professionals. Mm. You sacrifice everything because you believe in this ultimate end goal. It's like the Tiger Woods dad thing, where he's asked to sacrifice his whole personality into this thing, and it makes him psychologically like very unstable and basically unable to deal with any kind of complexity. But I don't know whether there's a kind of weird dissonance there.
Yeah, I think there is. I think when talking about the Nike advert with Colin Kaepernick in it, with that statement in, and everyone knows it's a banal statement, isn't it? Believe in something, and you see all of these sort of mock-ups where the motto is sort of thrown over like disingenuous images where you could apply the same logic to and you wouldn't ever want to acknowledge that kind of thing can be done. Again, like, call me cynical, but you have to make a comment as well about the power of authenticity in capital now. People know that the millennial generation is happy to call BS on things if they consider it to be being done in a very specific way that isn't authentic. Now, that can work both ways, as you said. You can easily pull apart a statement like that by Nike and say, yeah, we can see that you're trying to be authentic, but actually what you're doing is so wholly banal that some people will pull it apart. But I think what's so powerful about the Nike advert is that in this sense, it is attached to an image. And that image of Kaepernick comes with a whole context behind it, which when you interpret that that motto, you have to do it in a good faith reading. So I think a lot of the criticisms of it are coming from out of that sort of space where you kind of think, well, look, you've got to be on the right side of history here, guys. Like, people know why this is a powerful image, and banality aside, this is why you do it. I was going to go back to you because you talked about you talked a little bit about, like, obviously you're not going to get ideas of Hegelianism in football, and I just thought I would clarify on that point. For me, I'm a card carrying Hegelian. I think that Hegel is right. I think that his idea of the world is right. So for me, that's why I would latch onto something like that said by Jose Mourinho. And my piece was almost tongue in cheek. It was almost saying, what would happen if someone in that press conference, because he said, has anyone read Hegel? If anyone put their hand up and like, actually, yeah, I've read Hegel, let's have a conversation about it.
Marino would be
screwed. Yeah, exactly. What would happen? And so that was sort of my interesting angle on it. But yeah. I think the reason why I think there's space for ideas in sport is precisely because I see the world in that way. And I think this, for me, one of the real pulling powers of football is its Hegelian capacity in that dialectic sense. We talked about it pre-record, but you have different managers come along with different tactics, and you almost treat those as opposing positions. And the way that the history of tactics or the game develops is through that dialectic way, where you think, oh, it was really interesting in the 2014 World Cup when Spain were playing this brand of football called tiki-taka. And I read some of the papers around them, and a lot of the journalists were talking about it as though this was like the end of history, you know, in that sort of Fukuyama sense. Yeah. There's no, where can football go from here? We've arrived at the final form. And then in the however many years since, it's not even that far, so 3 or 4 years, we've just had the World Cup, haven't we? So in that 4 years, we've had another style of football that's come along from, which is often called gegenpressing, which is a different approach, which has caused problems. So Jurgen Klopp, the German Liverpool manager, has beaten Pep Guardiola more than any other manager in either of their careers. Mm. And for me, that's a really good example of that dialectic continuing. Like, there's another way of playing that can counteract this other one. So for me, the ideas are there. They're ontologically there. They're in the very fabric of what's going on in the world and in the game. Mm. So that's why I want to talk about the ideas, and not because I think that if I talk to Michael Owen long enough, he would start saying anything interesting.
Yeah, I think maybe, so you say that you're a card-carrying Hegelian who sees Hegelianism as this kind of truth, maybe, or that he's at least accessing something correct expressing something correct about the world. I see, because initially when I read your piece, which I think is great, I was a bit like, I know Marino's talked about Hegel, but why Marino and Hegel? Because, you know, you could also do Harry Kane and Marx, and you could do, you know, whatever. But actually, I guess it's maybe kind of like a grander statement about philosophy, that if you believe in a certain kind of philosophy and you believe it to be true, of course you're going to see it manifesting itself in sport or in any aspect of life. So let's say, for example, let's say I'm a Platonist, which I'm not, but let's say I am. Then I imagine I would, if I really truly believed in this idea, I probably would see Platonist arguments or Platonist ideas played out through football as well. Mm. So do you think there's an element to which, like, whatever kind of philosophy you believe in or ascribe to the world, like, you can intellectualise sport in that framework? Does that make sense?
I think so, yeah. And I think the really classic example of that would be someone like David Foster Wallace, who writes about Roger Federer, amongst other things, in that way, that has that whole sort of catalogue of his philosophical ideas, and he trained as a philosopher originally. And you know that when you're reading that piece, you appreciate the power of what he's saying, precisely because you appreciate that there is that philosophical backdrop against which you read it. So I think that's definitely the case. And for me, I think you are drawn to certain sports based on the sort of, and it doesn't even need to be like it. Look, I spent a lot of time reading Hegel because I did a lot of grad work in philosophy, and I did my undergrad in philosophy and theology. So I have all these ideas knocking around in the back of my head. But at the same time, I think it happens on an entirely unthematized way as well. I think the sports that people are attracted to are often sports that will react something about the way that they believe the world should be or is, mm-hmm. about anything. It could be even political or whatever like that. So I think that's why the interesting ideas need to come out. The issue with Mourinho, and this is precisely why I wrote the piece, is because he is just using philosophy there in an entirely instrumental way. He's throwing it out to just be like, one, look at me, I'm great, I can talk to you about Hegel and make you all look stupid in a press conference. But he's doing it in such a way that you could literally pull that quote out of brainy quotes or whatever it's called. You know, when you're doing an essay and you're like, oh, quick, Henry James on experience, and then it'll throw out a quote. That's what he's done. And I think you need to call that out, because I think so much of the time when people are trying to talk about ideas in sport, they don't put the hard yards in and think. They don't do the thinking. They'll say something like, and so you get the quote, for example, from Camus, who says, everything that I've learned about ethics, I think, I've learned from football. And people say that, and people are like, look, football and philosophy are coterminous, which is just, it's just not true. It's just an aphorism that kind of is nice because Camus said it, so we can sort of say that we're doing football and philosophy. So yeah, I think where I think there is a niche is that there's not many people actually doing that, and that's because for a lot of the time it's hard work and people aren't reading football journalism to do that. But I think if you do what I managed to, and I only managed to do it because Mourinho mentioned Hegel, that's the point, that's where this whole thing falls down, is that he's not sitting in press conferences being like, oh, have you heard about Deleuze?
So what what manager this weekend, you can pick whatever manager to quote whatever philosopher, yeah. what would you want, and what would be the most ridiculous?
I mean, the most ridiculous would be someone who's very English, so it'd be someone like Sean Dyche. Sean Dyche has a little bit of a reputation for being quite Brexity.
Who does he manage?
He manages Burnley, okay. So there's that as a background context. But he's also, people have noted that he's got about, I think, maybe two or three people of colour on his squad.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got this. So I think maybe him talking about someone like Judith Butler would be fabulous. If you could get Judith Butler into his press conference, you can expect another piece from me next week.
So I think this is the first for the Reaction podcast to mention both Hegel, Deleuze and Judith Butler within 5 minutes. Anyway, thanks for listening, and tune in next week for more stuff.